This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
It's housing day today, and it's the third Wednesday of the month, of course. And we've got a pretty full program. We're going to be talking to Elise Cunningham very shortly. She's the livable cities person at Friends of the Earth. And she's going to talk to us about a rally tomorrow to do with buses. So we'll talk to her shortly. Also going to be talking to, we've got our regular Shane McGrath from Housing for the Age Action Group coming in. He'll be in. And we're going to be talking today to Jeannie Ersig as well, who's a public housing tenant who's been moved around all over the place. She's a good example of people being shoved around in the current climate of closing places down. And we'll have a good yarn to Jeannie. She spoke at the last rally the other Saturday and came up with lots of figures as well about the amount of public housing social and community and all the other housings. That'll be good. And Jack Burden. Our regular, unfortunately, has been able to come on at the moment. So, Jack, we want to say thank you for all the work you've done. It's been terrific. You send in heaps of things to talk about every month. You go to a lot of work to do it. And you've been an invaluable part of this program now for 2 or 3 years at least. I can't remember how long it is now, probably even longer. And Jack,
we're going to sending our love and solidarity from this little corner of the
That's
airwaves.
Right. We're going to miss you, and we hope you get back as soon as possible. But anyway, good on you. And that was Karina over there. Of course, I'm Kevin Healy.
I was going to say all these names except for
that's
ours.
Right. That's right.
Good morning. Welcome to City Limits.
And this is City Limits. And so that's today's program, Karina. And you're stuck with the short straw today.
Yeah, our dear Anne Maxwell befell we have a regular caller who likes to talk about the virus soup. I believe there is flying around all sorts of bugs, so hope everyone out there is taking care of themselves, getting as much sun as they can where possible.
Yeah, some friends of mine rang the other day, and both he and she had the flu. They were laid down, but they were blaming each other for catching it, so I don't know which one was first, but anyway, there you are. You want a cup of tea?
Yes, please. My mum always spruiks the eucalyptus oil spray. That's one thing she always does, and in her small household, for whatever reason, they've never gotten sick at the same time. And she reckons it's because every time she walks in a room, she'll spray it behind her or in front of her.
Well, there you are. Do you want the olive one or the olive cup or the Marxist-Leninist Chinese cup?
Chinese cup.
Okay, there you are. Rightio.
Thank you.
That's it. Tea. Now, look, we're certainly trying to get money here at 3CR at the moment with Radiothon, 0391419837. And I know this program's still way behind in what we have to get, so we need lots more money. Because we all have a target, and our target, we're sort of, if we had a target and an arrow at the moment, the arrow would be bent and pointing toward the ground. So,
oh my goodness.
Yes.
Way to ham it up, Kevin. I think we're almost at the 900 mark. I've got a little tally of people
then
we need lots more. Thanked.
Given our targets way over that, we need lots more. So
maybe about 400 more.
Yeah,
I feel like
whatever.
Maybe I rustled up a little.
Whatever. Anyway,
community member who hopefully will send in a message.
Yes. So we still need more, but I raise that because even though we're talking about money and trying to get money here, we are nothing compared to the terrible things happening to the Australian economy, Karina. It's awful. And in fact, I think a headline in the paper just yesterday says it all on the front page of the Financial Review. CGT change, a risk to prosperity. Now, this comes from no less person than the head of the NAB Bank, Andrew Irving. And I think NAB's a wonderful name for a bank, NAB Your Money. Andrew says the government should rethink its proposed changes to capital gains and trust tax settings for businesses, warning Australia is in a global battle to attract risk capital and preserve its reputation as one of the best places in the world to live and work. He said the proposed tax changes announced by the government in the federal budget were reverberating through the economy, with NAB experiencing a slowdown in mortgage activity, particularly among property investors. Now, isn't that serious? I mean, it's affecting the bank's profits, for God's sake. This is terrible. Asked whether the government should reconsider the changes to trusts and capital gains, he said that would be what I'm hearing from customers, and that would be my view. And I'm sure the customers who we're hearing from are all working class people who are, you know, think we need to go and invest a bit more to help this country along.
Get nabbed. That's it.
So that's a serious situation. In fact, he goes on to say, while there was a recognition that reform of certain tax advantages was warranted for more passive assets and income, he said the proposed changes could result in double taxation. That's something that is concerning a number of our customers, and not just wealthy customers, but small business owners and business owners up and down the country. And I heard one of them say that, you know, outline what could happen if someone who now makes a young person invests and makes a whole lot of capital on certain things, they pay no tax, but under this they'll have to pay 30 or 40 or 50% tax. So they go from paying no tax to this, and that's another reason why you have to change it, according to someone on the news last night. Now, I would have thought that if you're making a lot of capital and profit, maybe you should pay some tax, but apparently it's good for the country if you don't. That's right. So that, I just wanted to make that point.
Point made.
Okay, I thought you might have said something brilliant then, but you didn't.
Well, I was just thinking about Andrew Irving and a potential donation.
Yeah.
Maybe you could send him an email later on your home computer.
Was Andrew on the list there you got there?
Maybe not that one anyway.
No. They're all doing it. But not so good, really. Host Plus, which is a superannuation fund, of course, it also has come out saying much the same sort of stuff. And I think that's not good, because that's workers' money. And I think workers should not be advocating. And they talk in very much capitalist terms, which shows where superannuation's got to, that has now got them talking about workers' money in those sort of terms, which I find a bit disturbing, to say the least. But you'll also be pleased to know that last week, when Elon Musk became the first world's first trillionaire, our own Gina put $1.4 million into SpaceX as well. She's invested $1.4 million. And I didn't realise what a great man he was. She says, having built two of the world's top 10 largest companies by market capitalisation is an extraordinary achievement. Elon has done what very few people in history have done. Well, she's right there in one sense. He has not just imagined the future, he has built companies capable of delivering it and helping to keep American technology at the forefront. We see SpaceX as a rare business led by a truly exceptional person, technically exceptional and operating in sectors that are crucial and with long-term potential. Hancock favours investing in, that's her company of course, in industries led by sensible, hard-working, patriotic and exceptional people. Elon excels in every regard, and she's got signs around her office with from Elon talking about how we've got to get rid of government and it's too bad. But then she goes on to say, which I find the interesting part, we also see the possibility of mutually beneficial arrangements between SpaceX and Hancock prospects in significant critical minerals investments as demand grows for the materials and infrastructure needed to support advanced technologies. So she's also had to make a killing out of the whole thing anyway. But anyway, that's good to see Gina showing great faith in him. I was going to say something about the grilled boss who loves his workers, even though for years he's been exploiting them to the hilt. But we might leave that for next week, because we're running out of time. I want to talk to Elise, and let's get her on the line and have a talk about a bus protest tomorrow.
Let's do it.
3CR celebrating 50 years.
This June we'll be asking for your donations to support 3CR.
Your donation during Radiothon keeps the station radical and enables us to give voice to our community for another year.
All donations over $2 are tax deductible. To donate, go to 3cr.org.au. Show your support by donating this June.
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
The revolution. Pledge now, pay later. Did you know that you can pledge your support to 3CR Radiothon now and pay up later? Call the station during business hours on 9419 8377 and tell us what you'd like to donate, and then pay your donation later.
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
Wage theft is the symptom of the problem.
What we're seeing is obscenely well-remunerated vice-chancellors.
It's appalling how badly universities have been treating their casual workers.
They want to pretend that they can continue on with business as usual. Well, comrades, we're here to say no.
You're listening to Radical Radio on 3CR. 855 on your AM dial, 3CR Digital, and podcasting and streaming on 3cr.org.au.
Okay, we've got on the line Elise Cunningham, who's the sustainable cities person at Friends of the Earth. And Elise, tomorrow at Parliament, you've got a rally on buses. What's the problem? I mean, there's lots of buses, remember? We see them all the time. Okay, maybe half hour anyway.
You know what the problem is. yes, we do. We have a rally at Parliament tomorrow at 12 p.m. And this is to mark 5 years since the Labor government released Victoria's bus plan. I don't know if people know that the Labor government released a bus plan for Victoria 5 years ago, but they did. And in it, it looked like, you know, they were really gunning for transformational network reform, which is what we have been fighting for and asking for. But we've obviously not seen much of that whatsoever, and especially in the western suburbs where our campaign is based. The issue is that the government just sticks to this piecemeal kind of network reform. So they'll add one bus at a time or fix one bus at a time. But that's not really addressing the root cause of the problem, which is that if you look at a map of the bus routes in the western suburbs, it's basically like a big tangled bowl of spaghetti. You've got buses taking, you know, four times or more longer than a car trip, and like in a lot of areas of the west, they're only coming every 40 to 60 minutes. So it's essentially unusable. I think it's only like 2% of the population in Victoria uses the bus as a mode of public transport, and that's because it's just so unreliable and just really uncomfortable. But it could be so much better, Kevin. It could be so much better. And we, you know, we've been working with the University of Melbourne for 4 years.
You got that report from John Stone at Melbourne University, and he had a solution which seemed quite reasonable, I thought.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they've mapped out what it would look like basically to reconfigure the bus routes into more of a grid-based network. So buses running a lot more direct, north, south, east, west, all across the western suburbs. And they found that that would enable buses to run every 10 minutes, all day, every day. And the cost of doing a network reform like this is a drop in the ocean compared to what they'll spend on any big road project or even a major rail project like SRL. You know, we've costed it at, I think it was $300 million for the first year. And the, you know, the benefits of it would be like exponential. I think it was in Hoppers Crossing, like 10 times as many people could access their nearest shops on a given weekday within 10 minutes. Whereas at the moment, if you live, you know, even a 5 minute drive away from the shops in Hoppers Crossing, if you want to get there on the bus, it probably is going to take you at least half an hour.
It's interesting that orbital bus service that runs around and goes a long way, but it runs fairly regularly. Frequency is the key. It is well used, and people often use it to go from, you know, to the local shopping centre, and then so in local areas, people use it just to get around and do their work. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And like, I think another part of the reason that the smart bus is so successful is because its job is sort of to replace a train network almost. And you're right. Yeah. Like the fact that it's running really frequently means means everything. That's like the number one thing that people want. And even in Labor's own consultations that they did for bus reform in, I think it was the Northeast and maybe out in Mildura, that's what they found in their engagement survey as well, is that people were like, you know, I would even walk a bit further to the bus stop. I would walk 10 minutes down the road to get to the bus stop if I knew my bus was going to come every 10 minutes. So they know this. They know that, like, our solution is completely logical. They know it's something that people want. But I think they're just wondering, you know, what's the thing that's going to get them votes at the next election. And funnily enough, we have done some research on this earlier in the year. We worked with Essential Media, and they did a qualitative study of community in the West to find out, you know, what we already know, I guess, from our community organizing what people think of the issue. But it was really good to get an answer from them that very tangibly said, yes, buses are a voting issue for me this election. I'm going to be thinking about bus reform and better public transport when I go to the polls in November, go to the booth in November. So, yeah, there's so much evidence, I guess, that we're putting forward to the government to say, like, people want better buses, people need better buses, and these are the benefits of better buses. But they just haven't done it yet. So that's why we're rallying tomorrow, is like to really show that there is this groundswell of support for better buses. You know, we're teaming up with the Mount Atkinson Advocacy Forum, who are a group based out in Mount Atkinson Estate, which is towards Melton Way. And they're, you know, basically living in a public transport black hole. They'd have no train, their buses, they don't even have a bus stop that runs to the estate. And they're just, you know, it's just not even an option for the folks out there.
The electrification of the Melton line has been promised in every election since about 1830, and we're still waiting.
Yeah, exactly. And the community are really feeling the impacts of that, you know, like they're rocking up to the station and it's like sardines. It's like Tokyo or something, like people trying to get onto the train and they're like jamming each other in. And like, you can imagine the implications that has for people with disabilities or for women. Like, I've had so many conversations with like women and gender diverse folks who feel like really unsafe in those situations. Yeah. Like they're kind of like, you know, they don't have space to like move their body, or like people are rubbing up against them. And
Tarnedon, Wyndham Vale are similar. I mean, they're on a V-line service, and the stations are crowded as hell in peak.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the same with the car parks, you know, like the car parks are all full by 7 a.m. because there's no buses to get people there. So people are having to park like 10, 15 minutes away from the station, sometimes on the curb, then they get a parking fine. And, you know, we're living in a fuel crisis right now, and it's crazy to me that the government hasn't yet announced, like, you know, they've obviously did the free public transport announcement, which I know a lot of people really enjoyed. And that was really great. But, you know, for folks in the West, that announcement meant next to nothing, like especially for those that were living in or live in areas where they don't have access to the service. It's like, well, what's free public transport going to do for me if I don't even have a bus that is usable, you know? So it's like we really need them to do something about service and frequency to match that demand and to meet that need. Because at the end of the day, public transport and buses are an essential service that the government should be providing to the community.
Clearly, but also one would think, just simply for pragmatic reasons, that those seats out there are looking pretty vulnerable to the state election, that they'd be jumping on something like this to, you know, to try to buy votes.
Yeah, well, hopefully. Yeah, we hope that they would, you know. And, like, we've, over the years, like, every other political party supports better buses, you know, like legalised cannabis, the Greens, even the Libs have all, you know, come out in support and said, yeah, we recognise that better buses is something that our community needs, yet where is Labor? You know, where is the action from Labor? It's, yeah. So we've actually decided that at the rally tomorrow, we are going to ask them to speak and tell us what their view is on better buses and if they're going to do anything. We weren't actually going to platform any politicians, but, we've decided that we're going to really put the pressure on them and say, you guys need to show up and you need to tell us what you're going to be doing.
Are they going to turn up?
I mean, I hope so. I think if we tell them that we're giving them a platform to speak, they might. We'll see.
Half a dozen or so of us met with the local member, or not the local, the member for, I think he's member for Coburg, on Monday night this week to discuss the accessible tram stop situation on Sydney Road.
Yeah.
But he was boasting about some of the improvements they've made to the local bus services, but I'm not so sure that they're all that good.
Yeah, and you know, like I want to like acknowledge and recognise that that was something that, you know, the community campaigned around and rallied for, and like I'm all for community rallying for better buses, like absolutely. But at the end of the day, that announcement was just in line with their usual approach of one bus at a time. And that's not the thing that's going to build a, you know, sustainable and equitable and just future for communities in Melbourne. Like anywhere in the outer north, outer west, one bus at a time isn't going to cut it. You know, like the community in the west is growing. In Melton and Wyndham, it's like the fastest population growth in the entire state of so-called Australia. Yet they're not, the public transport is like abysmal, you know, like, and that just means people are forced to depend on their cars, which obviously are not great for the planet, not great for people's pockets. It's wild that they haven't done anything about this yet, but you know, we're really feeling like 2026 is our year. You know, like this is really our time. So it's really, really important that people, like, we would love for people to show up in solidarity and support tomorrow, 12 p.m. at Parliament Steps, okay. Because this is our time.
We need a song in the year 2026. That's what we need. Elise, look, thanks for that. But anyway, just give the details again. It's tomorrow at noon, and it's a rally at Parliament for Transport Justice for the West. And let's hope people turn up. Yeah,
and we'll have cupcakes.
So oh,
come get
well.
A cupcake. And we'll have a fun stunt that we're.
They'll be queuing up.
I won't say what it is, but come and see our fun stunt.
They'll be queuing up all the way up Spring and Burke Streets tomorrow.
Yeah, good.
Elise, thanks for your time and good luck with it.
Thanks so much, Kevin.
Okay,
see you, everyone.
Okay, bye. Elise Cunningham there, who's the sustainable cities person at Friends of the Earth, and wandering into the studio in the meantime, of course, is Shane McGrath, who's the sustainable housing person at Housing for the Age Action Group.
Oh, something like that. Hey, Kevin.
How are you?
All right. How you doing?
Yeah, okay. Good. Yep. What grand news have you brought along this morning?
What grand news? Well, I mean, the grandest of the news is that it's still Radiothon time and that listeners can support either this show or our show, which is on the second and fourth Wednesday at 5:30, or the station, all the fantastic shows that are broadcast here. But apart from that, what's news? Victorian government has introduced a consumer amendments bill that includes quite a lot of residential tenancies stuff. Probably the most significant for most people is limits on lease breaking costs. You know, it's not necessarily the first topic that like comes to mind for people when they think about residential tenancy stuff. You know, often we're talking about things around eviction and costs and rent and things like that. But, you know, lease breaking is probably the single topic that I've given the most advice on in a long time working in this area. People need to break their leases all the time for lots of reasons. They're often, I would say, duped into paying more than they're really liable for by unscrupulous real estate agents. But the new bill, if it passes, will limit the amount of lost rent that can be claimed by a landlord for a lease break. And it's sort of proportional to how much time is left on your lease. So if you've got a quarter or less of your lease left, you only pay a maximum of 1 week's rent for the lease break. And that sort of scales up to 4 weeks' rent if you've got more than 75% of your lease left.
I would have thought that unscrupulous real estate agent is a tautology.
Well, arguably. I mean, arguably trying to extract as much money as you can from the renter for your client is the scrupulous part of being a real estate agent. But quite a lot of the bill is also dedicated to Part 4A residential parks or land lease communities, which we've talked about a lot. There's a new registration scheme, which is something that we've been calling for a long time, so we think that's really positive. Some other things in there that we maybe don't think are so extremely positive, but we're just focusing on the the positives, as we always do.
So,
on housing.
So when do they come into effect?
Well, it's just a bill at this point, so it's got to pass first.
Yeah, right.
So there's no commencement date at this point.
Yeah, but still it's an advance.
Yeah, there's some really good
positive steps in there. If it gets through, presumably it'll get through, but yeah.
Seems likely to me.
Yeah. Look, I wanted to raise something with you, actually, because there was an article in somewhere or other, how to protect your rental investment, which I know you'd be interested in.
Big concern for me and my clients,
big concern.
Yeah.
It was actually, but it was an ad for a person who, a company that actually provide insurance for landlords, but it gives you all sorts of advice what you can do and, you know, about the tenant damage and loss of rent, etc. But it then talks about needing for insurance, which they're selling you, but hopefully you'll never need it, but it may help you sleep at night. And I thought, you must go to bed every night thinking, I hope real estate agents, I hope landlords are sleeping well tonight, Shane.
It's not really something I've ever turned my mind to, you'll be surprised to hear.
Really?
Hmm.
Good God, that's terrible. Do you know much about this closure of the house in Foley House in Footscray?
Yeah, no, not really. It's not really a kind of accommodation that we deal with.
Yeah, no, okay.
Sorry, it's not going to be much
just ruined that conversation, didn't it? But it does sound quite serious. It's Salvation Army, and they're closing down a place that caters for blokes who've sort of basically been homeless and come off the street, and the people there thought they were had permanent accommodation, and suddenly the Solvers have decided to close it down because it's not economical, and they're all being, they're not all being thrown on the street, but they're certainly, there's arguments they're going to end up homeless. So, that was a great conversation, that bit. Any more?
Can I just say, normally Kevin calls me the night before the show to talk, sometimes we get as far as the things he'd like to talk about so I can do a little preparation. Last night, missed call from Kevin, but no message. No details about what we're going to talk about. Well, so you've only got yourself to blame.
That's right. Oh, thank you very much. You got anything else?
Well, I mentioned as well, it was World Elder Abuse Awareness Day on Monday this week. If people, I certainly hadn't thought about or known much at all about elder abuse before I started working at HAG. It is very widespread. It's very underreported and under sort of recognised. People don't understand it well. Would be a great time this week with the awareness day just passed to, do some research or some reading, think about what you could do for older people in your life if you suspected they were experiencing elder abuse. Seniors Rights Victoria is the specialist community legal service that deals with elder abuse, and they have some great resources if people want to find out more or get some advice or support for themselves or someone they know.
Yeah, it appears that it's an increasingly serious problem, apparently.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, look, one thing I did want to raise, I raised this with Kate Shaw a couple of weeks ago when she was on the program, but we're seeing again, there was an ad a couple of months ago now, but the Victorian Government Property Portfolio, and there's 9 places around Melbourne, Clayton South, Croydon, Lara, Laverton, Moonee Ponds, or Mount Denise out toward Torquay, but Sunshine West, Vermont South, Yarraville, all public property put up for a statewide offering comprising of properties with development, repositioning and land banking potential. Now, this is all stuff that should be or could well be public housing.
It could be public housing if we had a centre-left government, we could get some public housing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a classic example. And also, they've sold off the first in Sydney, but they've sold off the first of those defence properties they want to sell for several million dollars. Again, this is property that, once the government, federal or state, owns the land, one would have thought with the housing crisis they keep talking about, they'd realise that this is a perfect example to use it.
Yeah, I mean, even if they're not going to build public housing, because it's pretty clear that that's not a priority for them, you'd think they would at least, consider handing it off to community housing groups, which is their preferred sort of social housing strategy. It's just really disappointing to see the continued lack of investment and disinvestment in public housing by the government.
Well, it's disinvestment when you get rid of land you could use and give it to the private sector, which is going to make sure that that the housing is not affordable for those who really need it.
Yeah, and Victoria will continue to have the lowest spending on social housing in Australia.
It's good, isn't it? It's great to know that. They certainly have. I mean, the government talks about all the money it's been putting into housing. federal government talks and boasts about it, but is any of it public housing at all? Have they totally abandoned public housing?
I mean, there's not no money in public housing in Victoria. There is, you know, yeah. I mean, we know that there is quote-unquote construction going on around the recently demolished public housing sites. At least some of that is likely to remain public housing, and there's, you know, a substantial budget for the remaining public housing in Victoria.
Interesting that the Ombudsman yesterday came out and criticised the government over the way it's done the process.
Yeah, I didn't see that, but I mean, I think it's pretty clear that the government's process in deciding to demolish the towers has really lacked transparency.
Yeah, well, we're going to be talking to a woman shortly, Jeannie Ensel, and she's been moved three times so far, I think. Yeah. She was moved from one to another, and then that was closed, and then she moved somewhere else. She just keeps getting moved around.
Yeah, I mean, we'd really like to see her return to the principle that public housing is a home for life.
Erceg's her name, that's right. Karina's just held up a name for me. I couldn't find my bit of paper. Yeah, so what else? What other brilliant pieces of work have we got?
Well, HAGS recently started a new project called Housing Champions. So we had our first Housing Champions training session on Monday. And that's a project to train older people to be advocates in their own community about the need for, about their own experiences of housing insecurity and homelessness, and about the need for, you know, changes, public housing, all that sort of stuff. So we had 22 people come to the office or the meeting room upstairs for the training yesterday. And that's going to be ongoing over the next few weeks. And hopefully we'll have some fantastic new advocates out in the community after that.
And also there were reports about the long waiting lists for getting home care packages and even getting into places. Does that put more pressure on groups like the Housing with Age Action Group and to service all that?
I mean, I don't know that it puts pressure on us directly. We do run a Care Finder program, which is a program to assist older people to access aged care. So, you know, one of the problems with the Australian aged care system is that essentially you have to be online to access it or have a family member who can help you access it online. And of course, there are many older people who just don't have the sort of online access or digital literacy that they would need for that. So the Care Finder program is about helping older people to access the services that are available. And that's something that we have a whole team dedicated to across there.
Is that a problem? I mean, older people like me, in fact, who aren't online.
And you're shocking me.
That's right. But so much stuff these days people have to apply for. You have to be online to do it. Is that creating a problem with, well, I'm sure it is, with lots of older people?
Yeah, I mean, definitely not older people exclusively, but the idea of a digital divide where there are people and, you know, communities that have less digital access and literacy than others is a real problem. You know, the VCAT established its Rental Dispute Resolution Victoria project a couple of years ago now, maybe it's a year ago, which is designed to sort of streamline certain kinds of VCAT applications and resolve disputes faster. But it's apparently, if you look at their website, it doesn't really seem like there's any option to apply except online. There doesn't seem to be paper forms. You know, we had a client who had to go to their office in person to make an application because she didn't have the internet at home. We see a lot of problems around this. Certainly applying for private rental properties at this point, if you're not online, can be a real problem. And there can be downstream problems from that, because when people apply online, they might find that they've inadvertently given consent to the service of notices by their landlord electronically. So we've seen people who, you know, just had an email address so they could apply for properties, and then later on they've got a notice to vacate sent to that email address that they've, you know, not checked in 2 years and not known until it was too late that they were, you know, had this thing to deal with.
Yeah, it's a major problem, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. All right, we might do more of that at some stage, because it is an ongoing problem for older people.
Yeah, absolutely.
What other brilliant things are you having? Anything coming up where there's going to be these wonderful lunches coming up?
So we do have the monthly housing chats going on now. So this is just an opportunity for older people who would like to, you know, meet other people who are interested in housing, talk about their experiences, a sort of more informal setting. They can come along to Ross House. There's some food. Not only the official catering, but we've had some really great baking by some of our members bringing in their own things. I think that's on the first Monday of every month, but you probably want to give the office a call or check our website to check the details on that.
All right. And what's the office number?
The office number is 03-9654-7389, and just say you're interested in the housing chats.
And the website for those who are online
is oldertenants.org.au.
Okay, and that's that. There's also a report about that the word affordable housing should be dropped altogether. It was done by an academic somewhere, saying that, you know, it's absolutely meaningless. Like you've got areas where the affordable housing, even at 80-90%, is $500 or $600 a week. So that you have to have a pretty good income to still be able to access it, even though it's called affordable. I mean,
yeah, I think Hag's position is that rather than get rid of the term, there should be a clear definition, so it's not sort of manipulated by different organisations to, you know, look good or make themselves look good.
Well, so it is affordable, in fact.
Well, part of having a definition would be that it become affordable in some meaningful sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous having affordable housing is not affordable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, that's it for the month or
I think
more.
That's it for the month.
That's it.
Yeah, I got nothing else.
Oh, well, all right. Do you want to hang around and talk to Jeannie or...?
Well, I should get back to the office. But everyone, don't forget it's Radiothon time. Feel free to make a donation to Hag Show.
I might just quickly jump in and do my intermittent interruption here and say that I do have a little list of people to thank who did donate to City Limits since our last show. So thanks to Zeb and Dave and myself. I also wanted to plug, you know, Raise the Roof every second and fourth Wednesday of the month at the, is it the far?
No. 5:30?
5:30 mark. Thank you.
That's right.
And I did want to say also really appreciated your live contribution to Solidarity Breakfast this week, Kevin, and especially the part at the end
where
Annie McLaughlin asked whether you'd be pledging an amount to Solidarity Breakfast.
And I said, no, City Limits.
And the kind of funny thing about that is that I've got a long list of supporters and donors see anyone by the name of Kevin Healy on there.
I'm going to give my $1 today. No, I'm going to give my $50 today.
Well done. Thank
$1 is not even tax deductible.
No. Anyway, that's my two, Bob.
Rightio, yeah. Well, thanks for that. Thanks for that, Karina. Putting me right on the spot.
Yeah, as you deserve.
Thanks a lot. All right, look, Shane, thank you.
Thanks
and
very much.
Good luck with your program as well.
Cheers. I'll see you next month.
Shall do. I'll let you know what's on next month, what you're going to talk about.
All right, that'd be great.
Did you know that 3CR first went to air in 1976? That's right, we're turning 50 this year.
On behalf of 3CR staff and committee, I have much pleasure in welcoming 3CR listeners and friends here at the station to 3CR's official opening. 3CR Community Radio Melbourne is Australia's first community radio station owned and operated by a federation of community organisations, 95 in all. 3CR has arisen out of the experience and need of groups and individuals in Melbourne, people who have and are fighting against mistreatment or neglect by the mass media, people who have, by and large, been denied effective access to the media.
You're listening to 3CR, 50 years of radical radio.
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
3CR Community Radio Melbourne is Australia's first community radio station owned and operated by a federation of community organisations.
Hello and welcome to the very first edition of Women on the Line, the national programme of women's news and current affairs.
We're at our new studios in Cromwell Street, Collingwood, and the new, brand spanking new transmitter just north of the Collingwood Town Hall.
This is the whole importance of having 3CR and public radio, is the fact that for the first time you were hearing a black person's view about his life.
It does represent a unique achievement in democratising the airwaves, not only in Australia, but in the world.
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
Make your donation during our annual Radiothon. To donate, call 03-9419 8377 or go online at 3cr.org.au.
Okay, Jenny Ersig on the line. Jenny, you spoke at the rally the other Saturday and you talked about the fact that you've been moved around a fair bit, but also you gave stats on the levels of public versus so-called community and social housing around the what's been put into a place what was so public housing. But just your personal situation, you've been moved around so often.
Oh, yes. So, good morning, Kevin. Yes, I was at Bang Street Paran, which was a public housing estate. I was there for 24 years, and then they demolished that. That had 120 public housing units, and then demolished that, and now there are 228 social units and 206 private units, but no public housing. And then from there, I was relocated to Barrack Beacon in Port Melbourne, and that has also been demolished, and that had 89 public housing units, and now there are 408 units built there, 130 are community units, 278 are private, and there's no public housing.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? Where are you now?
I'm in a house in Port Melbourne. They relocated me to a house. It's actually a private house, so the Department of Housing is renting off a private landlord, and I'm renting it from the Department of Housing.
So you're still paying the, I don't know, 25% or whatever it is of your income rent.
That's right,
public
yes.
housing, yeah. But they yes. also, they're wanting you to move in, aren't they, to a community housing or social housing development that would increase your rent.
That's right. Because I'm a public housing tenant now, I only pay 25% of my income. But if I move back to Barrack Beacon, it's community housing and it's 30% of my income, yes, which I don't want to. It's very hard to pay already 25%. 30% is making it even more difficult.
No, that's just absolutely ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, that they want you to move back somewhere where they're going to actually increase your rent because it's no longer public housing. That's simple as that.
That's right. Well, I want to take a stand and be a public housing tenant and stay as a public housing tenant and not go and live in community housing. I don't want to be forced to go and live in community housing and under community housing rules.
Yeah, and you did come up with stats about the levels of public and private and social. Could you give us a bit more on that?
Yes, well, at Barrack Beacon, I said where I have come from, there's only 130 community units. So there were 89 public housing units. So that is an increase, but there's no public housing. I mean, the majority of housing built there is private for private rental.
Mm. And, of course, the so-called community, if there's more of it, it's quite likely to be smaller, so it won't cater for bigger families, for instance.
That's right. I heard there were, out of the 130, there's 40 one-bedroom units. I'm not sure how many two and three, but once you get to three bedrooms, there's only a handful. There might be four bedrooms, but only a handful of those. So really, if you have a big family, you're unlikely to move back there because there just isn't the room.
Yeah. I don't know if you heard or not, Jenny, but overnight, yesterday apparently, it was on the news this morning, I heard it, the Ombudsman has come out and in fact been highly critical of the government, the way it has handled the so-called redevelopments of these estates and more particularly the way it has treated people like you.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the relocation team have said online, oh, they treat everyone with dignity, they know everybody's needs, they know what the family needs, and they give what is appropriate to the family. That is not what has happened to me, and it's not what has happened to lots of tenants. Basically, they just give whatever they want to anybody, and basically they say, if you don't like it, okay, we'll give it to somebody else, and that's it.
Yeah,
which
so
they did to me.
The house you're in now, if you hang in, are you likely to stay there, or are they going to force you to move on?
Well, that's what I don't know. I have engaged a lawyer to try and see what my rights are as a public housing tenant and whether I do have to move back to Barrack Beacon. And, of course, if I do move back there, it would be under community housing rules because I want to stay as a public housing tenant. So I don't know my rights at the moment.
Yeah, but it's also, I don't know if it's community legal or not, but, I mean, having to get a lawyer can be expensive.
That's right. Well, I have got a community lawyer who is doing the work at no cost, And he's doing a few cases where people have been relocated and they've had the different things happen and they need the advice of the lawyer to advocate for them and tell them what actually are your rights.
Yeah, I would have thought that if you're in public housing, you've been moved from one public housing to another and now into a house that's still technically public housing, you have every right to stay in public housing as far as I could make out, but I guess the government might think differently.
Well, that's what I want to know, because I've heard that because this is a head lease, meaning that the department rents it off a private landlord, and I am a public housing tenant, I should have the right to still be a public housing tenant.
Yeah, and of course it also shows that the government is probably spending more money on that sort of residence than it would need to spend if it had kept the whole thing public in the first place.
Oh, absolutely, because I'm not the only one that the government is subsidising the rest of the rent from what I pay to the market rent. There have been numerous other cases where the government is also subsidising their rent, whereas if we stayed where we were and it was just refurbished, we wouldn't have any of this. We wouldn't have the anxiety of moving, of stress. It would be a lot more logical to do that.
Yeah. When you're forced to move, say, Bank Street to Barrack Beacon and then move to where you are now, does the government subsidise you for the costs of moving?
They provide the rental van, so you don't have to pay for that. They give you the tape and the wrapping so you can wrap all your things up, and they come and move you to your new location. So you don't have to pay for that. You just have to deal with the stress of actually packing up all your belongings and moving them to the next place.
Now, those buildings that were demolished that you were in, Bank Street and Barrack Beacon, the government argues with these demolitions that, the buildings have reached a stage where we can't do anything but demolish them and rebuild.
Yes.
Were they in those sort of conditions, or could they have stayed up?
Well, in Bank Street, I knew 10 years before they were going to be demolished that they were going to be demolished. So because of that, I think they let them run down. So by the time I left, the units were really run down and really they had to be demolished. I mean, I had water coming in. Yes, so I think in that case they really needed to be demolished because they had intentionally let them run down knowing they were going to be demolished.
Yeah, whereas they could have done maintenance and saved them.
Yes, well, I think they chose not to because they knew that that was on the list to be demolished. They chose not to maintain them, so it just slowly deteriorated over time.
Yeah. What about Barrack Beacon?
Yes. Well, that was a different story because they literally had come to the door one day in December and said, well, you're going to have to be relocated. The units are going to be demolished. And, yes, they had been up for 40 years, but they were solid concrete buildings and they could have been refurbished instead of being demolished. I mean, I just had my balcony redone because water had been leaking from the balcony downstairs to the lounge room, and they had paid to get imported tiles to fix my balcony upstairs up, and then no sooner had they laid them, and then the property was demolished.
Yeah, that makes a lot of economic sense, doesn't it, as far as anything else?
Yeah, but that's the sort of thing they do.
And, of course, I'm sure you've been to many of the meetings in the last year or two where qualified engineers and similar people have been talking about the fact that they could all these places could be refurbished at much, much cheaper rates than tearing them down and then converting them into what is not public housing anymore in the first place.
Yes. I mean, a study was done by Office, which is a not-for-profit group. They had done a study at Barrack Beacon, and they had proved that you could redevelop them and the government could save millions of dollars by doing that. And, of course, you would save having to relocate the tenants, but the government chose not to go down that route.
Yeah, it's pretty ordinary. And anything else, because we've got to wind up in a minute, but anything else you want to tell us about the situation?
No, only the fact that they want to demolish the 44 towers. And again, studies have been done that you could refurbish them instead of demolishing them. Again, you're uprooting people's lives. Some people have been there for 20, 30 years. They've built communities there. The government doesn't really care. They want the land. They want to build private... They want... private developers to build private building units there, have a small component of community housing and no public housing. The government does not want public housing anymore.
Yeah, I heard this morning, I might have been on the Brekkie show here, I'm not sure now, I can't remember, but that, you know, they're virtually molesting people every day to move them out, which is pretty serious and an incredible stress for those people.
That's right. I mean, I had heard that some people at the Towers, of course, a lot of them, English isn't their first language, and the relocation team had been giving them papers to sign, and they didn't even know what they're signing because English isn't their first language.
Yeah. Good God. All right. Look, we'll wind up there, Jeannie, but look, thanks for your time this morning, and good luck fighting them.
Well, thank you very much for having them on. Yes. I feel it's a long fight.
Okay, we'll keep in touch on it. Jeannie Ersig there, who's the who, as you can tell, is a public housing tenant who's determined to stay a public housing tenant, and let's hope she succeeds. Okay, look, we're going to wind up because Joe's coming into the studio today to do his Radiothon show and raise lots of money, and we have to raise lots of money as well, so just keep it flowing for City Limits. And no matter what program you give to, in fact, I think you should always mention City Limits, and that's the way to do it.
And the old, importantly, the old how to donate or make your pledge to pay later as well. Any number over $2 is tax deductible. You can call us at the station during office hours, 9419 8377. You can text in. If you have a mobile phone, unlike some of us in this studio, 0488 809 855. And if you're listening on the one of our various playback services, podcast, what have you, you can also jump online, 3cr.org.au/donate. And don't forget to allocate City Limits in there.
You're being very pointed this morning, Karina, but there we are.
Well, I've done a bit of monkey maths and I had about 400 to go for our target. And of course, everything before the end of the financial year can be taken off on this year's tax deduction.
Whee!
If you pay tax. And of course, with your $50 donation, ooh, he's passing me a pineapple over the panel as we speak, the theatre of it all. That means about 350 to go for City Limits. Stay tuned to 3CR. Yeah. And we'll welcome in Dr. Joe for his Radiothon extravaganza.
Whee!
3CR celebrating 50 years.
Here we are, we're all in the middle of the desert, and there's such a feeling of optimism. It's fantastic. And everyone really knows what they're doing, is very quietly determined and yet having a good time at the same time.
The cheers are going up now as three parachutists jump out of a plane right above the Honeymoon uranium mine site.
The hundreds of thousands of people have been marching around the streets of Melbourne this afternoon are now heading off to the Domain. So if you're at home and you've been enjoying the coverage but you still feel like being part of it, you certainly can. Just go on down there to the Domain where there'll be speeches and music and
3CR.
And 3CR. Always carry your tranny along with you so that you can hear what's going on.
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
To donate, call 03 9419 8377 or donate online at 3cr.org.au.
Pledge now, pay later. Did you know that you can pledge your support to 3CR Radiothon now and pay up later? Call the station during business hours on 9419 8377 and tell us what you'd like to donate, and then pay your donation later.
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.